Welcome to today's Builder Podcast. I'm Michael Hedstrom. The stock market has had an amazing run since the lows in March of last year, up around 100%, fueled by the massive amount of monthly liquidity injections by the Federal Reserve and fiscal stimulus spending by the government. Some people think we're in a speculative stock market bubble at the risk of bursting, while most investors seem to believe that the Federal Reserve will continue its unprecedented support of the markets and the economy. With me today is Lamar Villery, partner and portfolio manager here at Villery & Company. He will share his thoughts on the markets and highlight our investment approach. Lamar, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Before we talk about Villery's investment approach and portfolio strategy, let's start with the market environment. We see new highs every month without even a 5% pullback in the past 10 months. Following the Wall Street mantras, don't fight the Fed and the trend is your friend, have worked well for investors. What do you make of this market and what is your outlook?
Well, you know, as you know, the Fed has started to signal that it may back off a bit from some of this aggressive buying that's been going on for some time. But, you know, that's okay. It's healthy for interest rates to pick up a bit from here. So we've seen this coming and we're okay with it. The consumer, we believe, is very strong. Inventories are very low. Companies are beating numbers and in a lot of cases coming in way ahead of estimates. And so we still think this market does have some room to run. Obviously, the Delta variant is a concern, but investors, you know, we've now been through a global pandemic, so it's not as unknown a quantity as it was a little over a year ago. So fear selling, we think, is less likely. So we're still feeling pretty good about the economy right now.
With that backdrop, let's switch to your investment approach. You use an active, concentrated portfolio strategy that primarily focuses on small and mid-sized companies. Why do you in general prefer small and mid-cap stocks versus large caps?
Sure. So to be clear, you know, we don't have any bias against large cap stocks. We actually love them. In a lot of cases, you know, they're the best in breed and they're large cap or large companies for a reason. Of course, the problem is they're usually expensive. If you think back to Moneyball, you know, and Billy Beane with pitching, he'd love to have the pitchers that throw 100 miles an hour. The odds are the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to pay way more than he will or can. And we're like that. We think Amazon's a great business. It's just really expensive. So that's not the kind of thing we would buy. We're looking for bargains, which do come up from time to time in large cap, but generally where there are a lot more of them are in the small and mid cap or small size companies. So the nice thing for us is we can take advantage of our size and our agility being a relatively small firm to identify and buy these under the radar stocks. These have the potential to become the next big companies of tomorrow. Our investors can hopefully go along for that ride and see some real appreciation in their stock prices. With that said, we do have over $2 billion of assets, so we're big enough to get the attention from these small company and medium-sized company management teams. So we can get them on the phone. We can really drill down and understand exactly what their strategy is and make some really educated decisions on which companies are the best for our portfolio.
As we've seen over the past year and a half, passive investing and ETF index funds are getting a lot of attention and cash flows. However, why does active management matter when investing in small and mid-cap stocks?
If there's an investor out there that wants to own Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, kind of follow the herd, buy what's popular stocks, it's probably not worthwhile to pay somebody, whether it's me or one of my competitors, a management fee to buy them for you. Just buy the index. It's easy, buy it and go home. If you're looking to buy smaller companies that you think are going to really outperform those big, mature companies, there are some really big differences in the quality of these businesses, the quality of the management teams, and what their prospects are. So it's possible for us to have an informational advantage over our peers and over passive investors. Passive investors are just saying, I'll buy everything. We don't think you want to own everything because we think there's junk in there. We think, if you look at Nick Saban, why does Nick Saban do a lot better in college than in pros? He can out-recruit in college versus when he's in the NFL and he's sort of stuck. We think you can out-hustle an index fund that's just kind of buying everything. If we work hard and do our jobs well, we can beat them, and that's what we try to do.
By design, concentrated portfolios facilitate investing in the highest conviction ideas and therefore limit overlap with an index. Why do you use a concentrated equity portfolio approach?
You know, it does take a lot more work to pick one company in a space, in a sector, in an industry, and try to pick the winner than buy all of them. You know, the spray and pray approach that investors who go with the passive or go with an active manager that buys hundreds of stocks. but it's worth it. If you're trying to outperform the index, you need to be concentrated and you need to pick the right stocks that are going to outperform. And we don't think you need to own 100 or 200 stocks to be diversified. You can have a much smaller number by carefully be diversified among sectors and industries, but try to buy the best companies in each space. And we think that's the way to outperform.
And Lamar, how do you decide what position size to take when you buy stocks?
Sure. Basically, you know, the position size needs to be big enough to matter. When new peers that I mentioned who might own 200 stocks in a portfolio, which would equate to roughly a 0.5% position in each one, the stock's performance really isn't going to impact how the investor does, how the performance is. It's going to be a tiny little minute detail into how the performance is. We think when we do the work, we pick a stock and we think we have a great management team and a great business, we want that to really impact performance. So we buy larger pieces. Occasionally we'll buy a little smaller than normal if the company has less liquidity, meaning it doesn't trade as many shares. And a lot of the time those positions will grow. Either the stock price will increase or if there becomes more liquidity, we'll buy more. So we have to be a little careful on that end. You know, these are generalizations though, Michael. The bulk of our assets are managed as separate accounts, which means that the portfolios are customized. So we can buy the right amount for each specific client based on their needs and objectives.
What are 2-3 examples of stocks you hold in the portfolio that represent your investment approach? And why do you like them?
Let me just mention, I'll tell you about the three that we've bought most recently, and I think that might be helpful. So one that we've bought is a company called Porch. Porch provides software for home inspectors. So if you think back to the last time you bought a house, as soon as you agree to terms with the seller, the very first thing you do is set up an inspection. Well, Porch is providing the software to that home inspector. That gives them a huge informational advantage. So all of a sudden, Porch knows before anybody else that you bought a house, that you're going to be moving, that you're going to have a lot of needs. You're going to need movers. You're going to need a home insurance. You're going to need an alarm system. You're going to need cable and internet and so forth. So they can. That's a huge amount of advantage information. That information gives them a huge advantage over other companies. So they can sell that information. They can work with the homeowner. They can provide a lot of information to companies that can help them out. And we think they're going to be a huge business going forward. Another one is called Open Lending. Now, Open Lending basically helps facilitate loans to car buyers that aren't prime, but they're not really subprime. We call them near prime. This is an overlooked space and it's a huge amount of buyers. The company itself doesn't actually make the loan, so there's no balance sheet risk. They're not specifically a lender. They're just sitting between the car seller and the buyer and helping to match the right lender with the buyer to give them a better rate. So really it's a win-win using improved technology and information because the car seller gets more sales, the car buyer gets a better rate, and it's had huge growth, and we think this is going to be a really successful business. The last one to talk about is one that we literally just bought. We've been buying yesterday and today, a company called Freeport MacMoran. Freeport is the largest public copper miner. Okay, why copper? Why would we invest in this business? Okay, this has to do with our thesis around the future of electric vehicles. So for example, we probably wouldn't buy a company like Tesla, which is doing great, is growing really well, and is a spectacularly expensive stock. Freeport MacMoran, however, we think is a much more reasonably priced company. But if you believe in the future of electric vehicles, which we do, and we think there's a clear path to electric vehicles growing significantly for a long time, you're going to need a lot of copper, a lot more copper than we've had. A electric vehicle uses more than twice as much copper as a gas burning vehicle. Also, to grow out the infrastructure for charging network, you're going to need a lot more copper. So we think copper is going to be a really strong commodity going forward, and Freeport's are going to be a great way to play that. And they've recently paid down a lot of debt, so we think they've taken a lot of the risk off of it. This is a larger company. This is a large cap stock, but we think this is going to be a great contributor to our portfolios.
Lamar, that was very helpful in terms of your thinking around stocks that you find attractive and that you're looking to add to the portfolio. For the balanced portfolios that you manage, how is the asset allocation between stocks, bonds, and cash determined?
Well, first off, obviously, we determine the asset allocation in consultation with our clients. You know, everybody's different. Everybody's hopes and dreams are different. We have a lot of clients who own no bonds, a a lot of them who don't know bonds, even if bonds are returning 5 or 6%, which, by the way, as we know, they are not. Now, we also have clients who might say, well, I'd like some bonds, but boy, they're sure not that attractive. So, you know, today you've got the 10-year treasuries, not that much over 1%. That leads to bonds not being attractive for a lot of investors. And that's a factor in how we set our allocations with clients. Still, though, for some investors and a number of our clients, bonds are important. In addition to the income, which even though there isn't much, there is some income, but more importantly, for risk reduction. For a lot of clients, we've shifted some of their bond exposure to dividend stocks, which obviously pay more, but the client has to understand that there is a little more risk to those stocks since the stock price can be a little more volatile. But in a lot of cases, dividends can help people meet their needs.
So you touched on the risk reduction and including bonds in the portfolio to help with that. What about the equity portfolios? How do you manage risk in the all equity portfolios?
One of the obvious things is just making sure none of the positions gets too large. You know, we will let our winners run a little bit, but it's important not to have one company dictate the whole future of a portfolio. We love all of our companies. We think these are all great businesses, but you can't really fall in love with anything and believe that it's too great to sell. So we'll trim things back as they get to be too large. We also hold cash in portfolios. We hold some cash. It depends over time how much cash for each investor we might have, but obviously it is nice when there's a pullback to have the money to put to work. And then we make sure, as I said earlier, it's important that the portfolio fits with the investor's needs and objectives. So some investors, you know, you might have somebody in their 20s who's planning to use their money for retirement. That's a very different risk profile from somebody who's living off their dividends and bond interest. So it's client by client. And then, of course, we look at individual stocks. We don't want to own stocks that are unduly risky. So like a Tesla that we think the risk reward is limited, that's something we wouldn't even put in the portfolio to begin with.
That makes sense. How does your market outlook affect your investment strategy?
Good question. We always have thoughts about where we think the market may go. And that's a big question that our clients ask us a lot. And it does ultimately impact how the portfolios are set up. But that said, we're careful not to swing our exposures too radically. One of the very few things that all experienced investors agree on, including us, is that market timing is very, very dangerous. And generally speaking, doesn't work. You've got to get it right on the way in. You've got to get right on the way out. You've got to get right every time. Generally speaking, buy and hold is still the way to go. But we do see it from time to time when things get a little too expensive, we have trouble finding stocks to buy and we find ourselves trimming things. So we will have a little more cash then. And when things start to get cheap, we'll find ourselves being more in a buy mode. So there'll be a little less cash. So it kind of happens as a natural byproduct of what we're seeing as far as individual stocks. But generally speaking, we try not to be overly aggressive with market time because that's very dangerous.
Lamar, any final words to our listeners?
Sure. Just in general, the old adage of being a patient investor is important. It's also important to let your advisor know if there are any changes to your plans or your outlook as far as, hey, I'm thinking of retiring sooner or later. I'm thinking of buying a second home. The earlier you can share that with your advisor, the more they can work to customize your portfolio to your unique needs. And ultimately, it's important to stay the course. You don't want to sell every time something spooks you, and you don't want to buy every time you see something that you think might be cheap. You got to be careful. We're long-term believers in the U.S. economy, and we think the U.S. stock market's the best way for investors to participate. So buy right and hold tight.
Thank you, Lamar. As always, we appreciate your insight and perspective.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks also to all of you who tuned in and listened to this podcast. If you have any questions and for more information and insight from Villar & Company, please visit our website at villary.com or call us at 504-525-0808. This concludes our podcast. Have a great day.